Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Monday, May 5th. It's Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. I thought you'd remind me.
I know. And I was thinking about it all weekend, and then today, I have a busy day, so I guess I hadn't thought about it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now I want a margarita.
Yeah, you see. Are you going to be able to squeeze it in today with all your busy schedule?
Probably not, but I had a margarita last night, so I guess that makes up for it.
Yeah, I guess so. Huh?
So last night I went to the Ralph's, the new Ralph's,
the new Ralph's time down the street
on Ventura.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was overwhelming. I couldn't even concentrate on what I went in there for, and I didn't get anything that I wanted. I barely even got anything because it's too big.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that there's a glass elevator. Uh-huh. There's the escalator for a shopping cart in a supermarket. I've never seen that before.
They have it at Target.
Yeah, they have it at Target, but not
in the supermarket.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
I was like, this is way too much for a supermarket. It's so overwhelming.
I know, but I guess they had to do something to attract some new people, you know.
Yeah,
and it works.
It was slammed. I went probably at like 6 o'clock last night, and Sunday night is the best time to meet somebody The best time to meet someone on a Sunday is at a supermarket.
Really?
Yeah.
Like to pick up someone,
yeah,
you mean?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yep.
Well, thanks for telling me.
Think it's around 4 to 6 p.m.
Really?
It's the best time.
Did someone decide that or what?
No,
or
I've
you
seen,
were just like,
no, I've
you
seen
were
studies
hit on
it.
Really?
No, I've seen, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But this route, I was so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So overwhelmed. Like
I know,
couldn't concentrate
huge.
On anything.
It's huge.
And there's so much choice. I mean, I was looking at the cakes. I was really craving a dessert.
Uh-huh.
But there were so many of them, I couldn't decide
on one.
It's
like, where do you start, right?
When there's four of them, it's like, okay, I can narrow down if I want red velvet, vanilla, chocolate, or something else. But with literally 20 options of what kind of cake I wanted, it was just too much. I was like, well, I don't even want anyone anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to choose any.
Yeah.
I know. That's the story of our lives, you know? I mean, there's such big variety of everything when
Seriously.
You go to buy something that you just get overwhelmed and you say, you know what? I'm not going to make that decision, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And you leave without anything.
I know. And it's like when you go to pick. I mean, I remember when I was younger, we would go to the supermarket. I would go with my mom. And the wine aisle, she would be there for like 10, 15 minutes trying to pick a bottle of wine.
Really?
And it wasn't until I'm now this age that I understand why she took so long.
Right.
With birthday cards, too. I would hate going to the birthday card store with her because it would literally be an hour trip because she couldn't decide which one to get. But now I'm getting older, I totally understand why. Why? And it's like there's so many.
Right.
Like, do you want Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc? Could you want a red? And then you have to decide which one of that. And then there's all the price differences. It's just... whoa.
Yeah.
And especially when it's a big Ralph's like that, the wine selection is huge.
Right. Everything there's huge.
Yeah. I know. So now I'm starting to appreciate my mom more and be like, wow, I must have been really annoying when I was like, can we leave now?
Well, that's what kids do, you know?
It's true.
It's funny because yesterday there were a couple of kids here at the station on one of the shows.
Oh, and I saw this photo on Facebook.
The photo I posted. Aren't they like the cutest kids?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's like I was overwhelmed with cuteness here.
Aww.
And the boy is going to be with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler in their movie Blended that's coming up. And so he was like, you know, and they've got personalities. I guess the girl is a sister. And she's got personality from here to the moon and back.
Really?
Let me tell you.
Aww.
And so it was fun. You know, it kind of made me miss the days when my kids were that little.
Well, little and cute.
Yeah.
Well, not so cute anymore.
Exactly, no.
Because I've always wondered with child actors, because he's going to be in a big movie, was he kind of young and annoying, like not, a lot of the little kids are, or was he mature?
No. Well, you know, I didn't talk to them much, but they didn't seem that mature, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess as mature as
they
like
were just really playful and
uh-huh.
stuff. I don't even know how old they are, maybe 10 or something, uh-huh. you know, 8, 10. 10. But yeah, I don't know about ages with kids. I can't figure it out. No, but it's got to be like 10 or something, maybe 12. I don't know. But they were like very playful, uh-huh. you know, and loving and stuff. It was just amazing. Yeah.
That's
you
cool.
know, so I had to take pictures with them.
No,
you know?
Yeah. I saw the photo and I was like, wow, I wonder what Sam was.
Yeah.
That's
so that,
fun.
Yeah. So that was here. And so then I saw on his Facebook, he's done some commercials for McDonald's and stuff, some big parts, you know.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So I can see, you know, I mean, the thing is, these kids, they have a personality, you know. It's not like they
right.
just pick them out of thin air,
yeah,
you know?
Completely.
They see them, you can spot a kid that's talented and that's
yeah.
going to be a draw.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, you totally can. They have yeah. just an extra twinkle in their eye.
Yeah.
Just, it's that it factor that people
yeah, and
talk
they're
about.
Mature. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the way they come across, they have no fear.
Yeah.
You know, they're very outgoing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just very impressed. I mean, the girl especially, she was like all over the place.
Aww.
Very impressive. So, yeah. So I don't know if she's going to be in any movies or anything, but you know,
you never
they
know.
Were both here, yeah.
Yeah, that's so, cool.
I know.
Did you have a good weekend other than that?
A good weekend. Let's see. What did I do? The biggest thing is I went to buy some clothes. If you can see, I have something other than black today.
Yeah.
And
looks good.
Thank you. Yeah, so, but you know what I noticed? It's like all the fashion out there is all polo shirts, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I can't find really nice tees, you know, like t-shirts that are like, because I like, you know, for lack of a better word, expensive t-shirts,
mm-hmm.
you know? And not just the t-shirt that has a print on it or
right.
something. You know, it's got to
yeah.
be like fine fabric and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they don't have any. I mean, everything is with the color, you know? And I don't like it because what happens is after you put it in the dryer and you take it out, it's all wrinkled.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what am I going to do? You know, I don't have a choice. I need shirts. And that's why I've been putting it off because every, you know, and I go to Macy's. They've got like a million brands in there and they're all the same.
Yeah.
So I finally thought, you know what? I'll just have to iron the collars. I don't have a choice, you
mm-hmm.
know. And
and especially, I mean, everything's the same.
Yeah.
Everything is the same in every store, even for girls.
Yeah, really? For girls,
yeah.
too?
Yeah. I mean, I've been trying. I'm going to a wedding this weekend, and I need a dress to wear. And the bridesmaid's colors, I had bought a dress that was coral.
Uh-huh.
Then I found out after the bridesmaid's colors are like orangey corals. So I was
right.
like, great, well, I can't wear that. So I had to find a new dress. So I was going in all, I mean, I went to 3 different malls, so many stores. All the dresses are coral.
Whoa.
I was like, there has to be people at this wedding wearing coral. There's
right.
no, like, everything is coral. Eventually, I was literally shopping for about 6 hours.
Wow.
And it's always worse when you're trying to find, when you know something you want, you can never find it.
Right.
So that's always worse. The fact that you want t-shirts without a collar, the fact that you're wanting that,
right.
you're probably not going to find it. Yeah,
right.
That's always the case.
Because you're looking for something that's not available, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. You know, I got to say, though, and you have to admit that women have a much bigger selection of clothes.
Oh,
you know?
Completely.
So many different more options.
Yeah.
You know, as a guy, you walk into the store, okay, what do they have? They have jeans, they have shorts, they have t-shirts, and they have polo shirts.
Yeah.
That's about it, you know? And they all look the same. I mean, you know, give me something cool. Give me something, you know, like you know. So I found one or two shirts that were kind of unusual, and I got
mm-hmm.
them. But for the most part, it's like, how do you stand out? How do you wear something you really feel good wearing, you know?
Completely. And especially at the mall right opposite where we are right now in Sherman
right.
Oaks, every store, I don't even think there's one male store in there.
No, probably
every
not.
Every store
just the
is just for
stores.
Females.
Yeah, because men don't buy clothes. You
yeah.
know, I mean, I'm here to say, you know, I buy it maybe once, twice a year. I go and it's
mm-hmm.
hard to get me to go,
right.
too, you know. But finally, you know, I mean, I realized, you know, all my clothes are like getting old now. So, I mean, I went shopping a couple months ago, but that was for winter clothes.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly it's now hot.
Well, this week it's supposed to get colder, so you might need them again.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think it's only down. I think it's 60s or 70s.
Really?
But it's
be
supposed
nice.
To get colder this week.
Good.
I'm going to look right
good.
Now.
It's been really hot lately.
Oh, well, it's getting back up to 81 on Friday, so maybe not.
Oh, yeah?
But it, that's the Friday, weather changes yeah. every day. Like, last Friday, I looked for the next week, and it was, like, low 60s. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's so going to get cold. But now it's saying low 70s.
So right, yeah.
Who knows? It'll probably be 90s all week.
Probably, yeah. I mean, Saturday was supposed to have cooled down, and it was very hot.
Oh, my gosh, so stifling.
I know.
I was at the beach, and...
Really?
Yeah, it's hot. Really hot.
How is the beach these days? You enjoy yourself there?
Yeah,
you
it's
like
nice.
It, right?
It's.
You don't mind the cold water and
no,
all that,
I actually like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to get in, and I love running and jumping in the ocean.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I'm a water baby.
Yeah.
Complete
yeah,
water baby.
Yeah, Miss Swimmer over here, you know. You've probably been in water at every temperature possible, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I don't miss waking up at 5 a.m. to jump in a freezing cold pool.
Really? Did you have to?
Oh, yeah.
Why was it freezing?
Because when it gets to winter in Tallahassee in Florida, I mean, it gets below zero.
Okay.
But we don't go into the indoor pool unless it is below zero.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So unless it's 32 or below, we're outside.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So 34, 36 degrees, we're outside. And I remember the very first practice I did at Florida State, and it was really cold outside. And the coaches would come into the locker room, the female coaches into the girls' locker room, and tell us the different groups what the warm-up was. So we could literally just run out and jump in the pool and get in. And I remember that first practice, and it was so cold out, running into the water, and it was like a sauna, a jacuzzi. It was so warm.
Really?
Steam was coming off. From that practice after, freezing. I don't know what happened that one practice, but I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like,
yeah.
So nice and warm in here. And I vividly remember because I was like, wow, this is great. It's so warm. Uh-huh. Ever since then, it was freezing cold.
Wow. How did they let people get into the pool?
So cold.
I mean, I think when the water is like 70, it's cold already. 60, right? It starts to get
cold. Oh, yeah.
Water, you can feel it. I mean,
oh, definitely. And when you get going, after like 15, 20 minutes, you're warm. And it's okay, especially with distance. I swam distance. So, I mean, we're swimming constantly for like 30, 40 minutes. And then we would stop, and then different practices.
Have time to think about the
temperature. Yeah, but you warm up.
Right.
But that first initial, and your arm comes out the water, and it's so cold, or if you're kicking on your back, and your nose is the only thing out the water, your nose is just so cold.
Wow.
That's what I don't miss about swimming.
Okay, well, listen, I think our guest is calling in, so we didn't even introduce him, so let's go ahead and do that right now. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
This is Dr. Jaffe.
Yes. Good morning, Jaffe. How are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good. How do you pronounce your first name?
Adi. Like the first half of Adidas.
Right, that's what I thought. Adi Jaffe, welcome to the show. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling from the Alternative Brain Institute.
Yeah, where's that located?
It's in Los Angeles.
Oh, you are
is?
Here in L.A.
Cool.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, we're right on Robertson.
Oh, I see. Nice. Okay, well, we arranged a phone interview. I thought maybe you were out of town, but that's okay. So, we have your website here, Alternatives Brain Institute. And is this your company, your organization?
It is, yeah. It's part of Alternatives Behavioral Health, and it's a program that we have that allows people without medication and without any invasive surgery or anything like that to help deal with things like anxiety, sleep issues, stress, impulsivity like ADHD, etc.
I see.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And so you're saying this is done without prescription drugs and invasive methods and stuff. Tell us, so how is it different?
Sure. So neurofeedback and biofeedback are two methods that we use a lot of in addition to mindfulness. And actually, all three of those have been shown to be essentially equally helpful for things like ADHD, especially and impulsivity issues, as medications without many of the side effects that people end up experiencing. So, what we do with each of our clients when clients start with us is they get a brain map. One of the nice things about getting a brain map and the whole imaging of your brain is, the brain is that one part that's pretty important in your life, but you never get to see it. So you don't really know what it's doing or how it's doing it. And yet, it is the source of sleep issues. It's the source of anxiety. It's the source of the impulsivity, all those sorts of things. So each of our clients get a brain map to start out, and that kind of informs us in terms of what we need to do moving forward. What we see in those brain map patterns is the points on the brain at which the activation is happening that is causing the anxiety, causing the impulsivity and things like that, compulsivity, all that sort of stuff. And then we get to work. I kind of equate it to going to the gym, but now for your brain instead of your body.
Right. Now, so you find out all these things about the brain by scanning it and looking at it physically, right?
Yeah, we do something called a QEEG, a quantitative EEG. Do you know anybody who's ever had a sleep study?
No, I don't, yeah. But go ahead.
People that get sleep apnea will often go to get a sleep study. They get a bunch of electrodes put on their head, and then they go to sleep, and the idea is to measure what's going on in their brain and their body while they're sleeping. The method we do starts out with something very, very similar. And yeah, exactly, that's really the point. You know, since we can't see the brain, and even if we could, we wouldn't be able to really understand where the electrical impulses are happening. What a QEEG does is it measures the electrical impulses that are going on in the brain under the scalp. And we do that in a few different settings, eyes open, eyes closed, and all those sorts of different scenarios. And what that helps us do is get a baseline of how a person's brain is functioning. And then we get some pretty good indicators of what they don't like about the way their brain is functioning. And we literally go to the brain gym and work that out.
Wow.
So you can get an idea of what people don't like about their brain just from that.
Yeah, so let me kind of give you an example. Some of these things are things that we've known for a while. So one of the things that I've developed an expertise is over the last 10, 15 years is addiction, for instance. And in addiction, a lot of people talk about something called hypofrontality. It's a fancy name for something that means that the front of their brain is under-functioning. It's not working as hard as we would like for it to. When we do a QEEG, what we see is we can separate out the different types of brain waves that people's brains are producing. Delta is the slowest, all the way, and it goes up to theta, all the way up to beta. Beta is an active brain. We would want people to have a lot of beta activity in the front of their brain because that would mean their brain is being very active in that part, and that's the part that prevents impulsivity and risk-taking and things like that. Oftentimes, people with ADHD have a lower acting front part of their brain, and we see that in the map. We see that the ratio of the different brain waves in that area is leaning towards underactive instead of active. And then what we can do through, and it's actually a pretty cool process when you sit down with it, because it's so non-invasive, people sit with electrodes on their scalp and they play video games. But instead of playing with their hands, they're playing with their brain. And so what happens is when their brain activates the part right behind their forehead, the prefrontal cortex, the game moves forward and shows them that they're doing what they're supposed to do. And the brain learns. So people come to us for about 20 to 30 sessions. It takes about 2.5, 3 months. And they get permanent or semi-permanent, long-lasting changes in the way that part of the brain functions because over time it has learned that what we want it to do is act more. And that's one example with impulsivity, for instance. But depending on what they're feeling and what we're seeing in their brain, we can do that with a lot of different sort of what we consider psychological effects that are really, in essence, their brain doing or not doing something.
Right. So are you saying you can actually change the way people think?
Well, it's yes, but not in the way, you know, it's not like I can control what people remember or what people like in the world.
Right.
But what I can do, I think of it like this, right? Imagine that your brain had a bunch of dials, and, you know, they control impulsivity and anxiety and sleepiness and stress response, all those sorts of things.
Right.
Imagine that we could go in and we could move the dials around a little bit. So if you're used to functioning with a lot of anxiety, and oftentimes we find that that is what causes sleep issues, we can dial down people's anxiety. We can reduce it by 40, 50, 60%.
Wow.
And those people all of a sudden have a much easier time falling asleep.
Wow. And that works like on a subconscious level?
It does. It's not at all conscious. It's not something that you can do. You know, you're not sitting there playing the games and saying, I want to be less anxious and focusing on the game. You do it very subconsciously. The nice thing about it is your brain is learning the entire time. So this works on a concept called operant conditioning. That's a psychological concept that says that when your brain does something and gets rewarded for it, it wants to do more of that. It's the same way we train animals to do everything. It's just in this case, we're literally training it based on brain activity instead of behavior.
Right. Wow.
When you said earlier that it was non-invasive, are you meaning it doesn't? Because I know a lot of these things can kind of harm your brain and harm different when it's done on different parts of your body, it doesn't harm anything or affect anything.
Not only does it not harm anything, the non-invasive piece, I mean, there's no pain whatsoever. So it's literally somebody places a little electrode on your forehead or on top of your head with a little bit of sort of like a paste. We attach it to that part. It removes very easily. There's absolutely zero pain, not even, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, it's not even a 1. It's a 0. And it doesn't harm anything because, first of all, it doesn't transmit to your brain. So it's not like we're sending electrical impulses to your brain. We're just paying attention to what your brain is doing, and then we're reacting based on what your brain is doing. So your brain is the thing doing all the work. It's kind of like this. It's like going to the gym and working out your muscles, right? As long as you stay within the boundaries of what your body can do, it's pretty difficult to hurt yourself.
Right.
And that's a concept that the bio-neurofeedback work under.
Wow. That's I mean, that's pretty involved and complicated stuff. How did you get into this?
So I got my PhD at UCLA in behavioral neuroscience, and actually Dr. Andrew Hill, who's the director of our neurocognitive services, specifically on the biofeedback and neurofeedback, was a cognitive neuroscientist. We studied together, and you know, we opened up a treatment center and sort of we wanted to start using some of the latest evidence base to help people. You know, we live in a world where everybody gets put on medications first.
Right.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor, you say, I have anxiety, and they say, well, here, take this pill. But there are problems with that. The problem is, first of all, the pills don't produce only the effect you want. They produce a lot of other effects. So you take an anti-anxiety pill, you also get tired and sleepy.
Right.
It's also difficult to drive. All those other kind of unnecessary, unwanted side effects. And then the biggest one, you know, I also run an addiction treatment center. The biggest side effect is you can get addicted to some of these things. And so maybe you have anxiety and maybe you'd like to experience less of it, but maybe the first best course of action is not to take a pill you might get addicted to. Maybe there's something else we can do first. And when we saw the evidence base behind it, and Dr. Hill's been doing this work for 20 years, I mean, before he got the PhD, we said, we've got to get out to a place where we can do it. And so what we decided is we literally kind of opened up our own little brain gym. And that's the way I talk to a lot of our new clients coming in, is to demystify the idea a little bit, because you're right. This requires a lot of knowledge. It requires a lot of equipment, expensive equipment. But we do this actually for people all over the world. So people will come to us for 3 days to 5-6 days, get trained and do some of the brain mapping stuff here with us. And then we send them home with a unit that they rent from us, and they get to do this stuff at home. And we've got success stories all over the world.
Wow.
Of kids who are just about to get kicked out of school. And you can do this with 6-, 7-, 8-year-olds. Kids who were about to get kicked out of school, their ADHD was causing them to really be disruptive in class. They work with us for, you know, a few weeks to a month, and all of a sudden all their teachers feel completely different about the way they're functioning in class. Their parents are calling us and emailing us, telling us that things have gotten so much better, and they're not putting on any medication. There's nothing that they're doing that's harmful to their bodies. It's pretty amazing stuff.
Wow. It does sound pretty impressive, you know. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to
ask you, though, I mean, there's got to be a factor of people saying, well, you know, maybe a little hesitant about having things like this done to their brain, you know. And because, I mean, you said it's not invasive. There's nothing that you're going in there to do. But nevertheless, it does affect certain things.
Sure.
I mean, do you find that? Do you find that people are apprehensive about it?
You know, it's interesting. I think, I don't know if it's because of the press coverage in the last 5 to 10 years about medication, but most people actually come to us and are happy about the fact that they don't have to be put on meds.
That's true.
And and once they realize that there's another option, and, you know, medications seem like they're cheap, but, you know, you pay $30-$40 every month for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And you're talking about many, many thousands of dollars, right, over your lifetime. And so treatment with us for 2 to 3 months ends up costing less and lasts longer without any of the side effects, right? Without needing to worry about becoming addicted.
Right.
And so we actually find the opposite. We find that people come to us and they're so excited at the prospect of having something that is non-invasive, that's non-painful, that they can't get addicted to. The pills are always an option at the end, right? If this didn't work for you, there's always that option. But people don't really like putting a bunch of medication in their body on a regular basis. And so this is a really nice alternative to that.
That's true, yeah. Now, so is this, I mean, this sounds, you know, like pretty sophisticated stuff. Is this affordable to most people, would you say?
Sure. So, you know, it depends on what kind of treatment people get. It goes everything from about $3,000 to $4,000 for about 3 months of treatment, all the way to people that come to us for a whole year of treatment, and it ends up being more like $15,000-$17,000.
Wow.
Insurance will cover some of it.
Yeah.
But this isn't dirt cheap. This is not dirt cheap sort of stuff.
Well, no, not really. But I think it's very affordable for what you're describing. I thought you were going to say for a year it'd be like $50,000-$60,000.
I was thinking.
And not only that. I mean, again, you know, we have clients who have had their kids who've been going to psychiatrists and getting medication. So once a month, they're getting about $50 to $100 appointment, depending on who the psychiatrist and what their coverage is, and then $20-$30 worth of pills.
Right.
You know, they're paying $150-$200 a month, and have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
They do this for a few months, and they're done. And it's sort of magical when you see it work.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, I want to make sure that I'm clear about this. We do see some people for whom it doesn't work. The nice thing is we get to find that out normally within about 10 to 15 sessions, so about 3 weeks into working with us.
Uh-huh.
And we tell them, we say, you know, there's a small subset of people for whom the medications are the necessary thing, and we get to find that out pretty quickly. And so, you know, our job is to ease people's discomfort. You know, I've had clients who have had sleep problems essentially their entire life. They come to us almost not believing that there's something to do about it, because they've been taking medications for a long time, and sometimes the medications work, sometimes they don't. You know, they try to go to sleep at 11 p.m., they don't fall asleep till 3, and then they end up being late for work. We hear so many stories about people who are really suffering.
Right.
They come get a little bit of treatment, and 2 to 3 months later, they're off their sleep medication.
Wow, amazing.
How long has your practice been open?
We've been open for about a year and a half. We've moved. We started out in Beverly Hills, which, you know, we're literally on the border of Beverly Hills, so we moved about 10 blocks. But we started out in Beverly Hills in a relatively small office, kind of doing the stuff as you kind of mentioned. This is not the big thing people normally hear about. They think about psychiatry and they think about pills.
Right.
And we opened up, and then within 3 to 4 months, we started growing so much that we ended up moving here to Robertson, and we've been here for about 6 months now.
I see. Now, so you guys are medical doctors, right? I mean,
No, we're not. That's a really good question. We are not physicians. We don't prescribe medication. Dr. Hill and myself have a PhD, and our clinical director, Dr. Mark Kern, is a licensed clinical psychologist.
I see.
So we're psychologists and PhDs, but we're not medical doctors. We do work with a lot of physicians because some of our clients still, like I said, still need some levels of medication. And we also do addiction treatment on another side of our suite. So for both those reasons, we work with a lot of physicians, but we're not physicians.
Yeah. Well, so that's amazing. So you're saying actually people do quit drugs or alcohol. You can treat things as complex as like bipolar disorder, things like that?
What I would say is this. People come to us after having been diagnosed as bipolar, and after working with us on their anxiety, and again, this all depends on the initial brain map, so right now I'm just kind of talking theoretically, but I'm thinking of one specific client who came to us absolutely diagnosed as bipolar, did a lot of work on her anxiety using our biofeedback and neurofeedback, and now she displays no bipolar symptoms and is not on medication. So if somebody really has a biologically oriented bipolar disorder, I'm not saying that we can fix that. But what sometimes looks like bipolar disorder doesn't actually end up being bipolar. Some of the methods that we use are somewhat effective for depression. The stuff that we work on is really more effective for the sleep, impulsivity, and anxiety issues rather than depression. There's transcranial magnetic stimulation that we don't do here that is somewhat effective for depression. But when it comes to all those anxiety things and impulsivity and attention and ADHD stuff, that's our bread and butter.
Wow. Very impressive, I got to tell you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, this is probably like the next step in getting people to get better, because there's so much, mental illness going on in the country and stuff. And you know, a lot of anxiety. I see that all the time. Stress, you know, things like that, you know.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I think you're right. And I think we live in a high stress society, right? There's no question about it. It's what was it? I think during the Super Bowl, I was watching the commercials. There's a Cadillac commercial that is all about how we work harder than any other country. And we don't take breaks and we don't let ourselves off the hook.
Right.
That's true, and it might lead to success, but it also leads to a lot of stress and anxiety.
Right.
And the problem is that the way we normally treat it is by giving people prescription pills. And some of those people now got their anxiety taken care of, but now they're dependent on medication. And so it's a really fine line between when we're helping people, when we're harming them. And what we'd like to do is be able to be a player in that area, kind of telling people, look, medication might be necessary, but it might not be the first step, and you might be able to take care of this just by working out your brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely worth a try, you know, and I know that medication always has side effects and everything, and I can tell you, I hate it, you know. But but this sounds like it could help a lot of people. Dr. Adi Jaffe, the place is called Alternatives Brain Institute, and so you're here in LA, and so you have like your own facilities where people come and they spend some time. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. We have our own facility. If you just go to alternativesbraininstitute.com, you can contact us right there. And we'll reach back to you that same exact day, and you can come check us out.
Sounds good. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. I find this fascinating. I always like to hear about new things, and it sounds promising. I mean, it sounds pretty scientific to me, so I'm impressed. You know?
Definitely.
It's fun. It's impressive for people when they go through it. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much
thank
again
you so much
for calling
me on.
You.
Of course. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Wow. Yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't even ready for something like this. And
it's like the next level.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you can make yourself feel better without medication, go for it, you know.
Completely. And not only like the addiction to medication, but the side effects.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
So many,
it's not the addiction. I mean, look, it's like some medication. I'm on meds, okay? And for like bipolar and stuff. So I take three different medications. It's like a cocktail. And it took years to find it because you know, I was diagnosed as just depressed or this or that, and they would give me like Prozac and go home, you know, but no, that wouldn't work for me.
Right.
So finally I was lucky enough to find a doctor that would put like a combination together. And that's what psychiatrists do as opposed to psychologists. Psychiatrists are the doctors, the medical doctors. And all they know is, you know, I mean, forget about if you try to get some advice from them or get a sympathetic ear, because they're not psychologists. They don't, you know.
Yeah.
So when you see this on TV where a psychiatrist actually talks to the patient and stuff, no, that doesn't happen. They sit there and, you know, and they figure that this one and one equals two.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they put their meds together.
Mm-hmm. And if it's like anything in England, they're rushing you in and out so they can get to the next person.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is what's wrong. I'll give you this. Go.
Yeah,
next
exactly.
Person. All right, this is what's wrong. All right, you're done. Next person.
Yeah. But, you know, but that's the thing, though, is that if you want to find the right combination, though, chemically for your brain, then a psychiatrist is a place to go, you know, because they will tell you, okay, I'll put this medication plus this medication.
Right.
And we'll see if that works. So I got to tell you, it's worked for me. I mean, I've lived, a productive life.
Yeah, you have.
I haven't been happier, you know, than I have.
You okay?
No, not really. Let me drink a little bit.
Something caught your throat.
Yeah, I'm telling you, just dry weather is killing me.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, so, you know, so I've been on the right medication, but I got to tell you, man, the side effects are killing me.
Mm-hmm.
They're killing me. It's ruining a lot of things in my life. And it makes me very, very anxious about that. You know,
right.
But I realized that, you know, like you said, it's not the $40 a month, or I pay more than that because it's three different medications. But it's not just that. It's the fact that you have to deal with the effects it has on your life. And you go, is this really worth it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I try to go off the medication and bam, man, I just dropped into deep depression, you know, after just a few days of discontinuing the medication. And obviously I didn't do it the way the doctor said. I just kind of accelerated it at my own pace.
Yeah.
And that scared the shit out of me, you know.
Wow.
So I went back, started taking the medication again. I said, you know what? I'm not messing with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd rather be able to be healthy and feeling okay, you know, obviously I want to be happy and really happy. But all I'm saying is if I can even feel at least okay, then I'm not getting off the meds.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Because it makes me like, I mean, I can't tell you. It's like I totally forgot what it was like to like.
Mm-hmm.
And they say in bipolar, the depression is really deep, you know, really serious.
Yeah.
So And, you know, I got to tell you that most of people that commit suicide have had bipolar. Yeah.
Wow.
So because it like makes you crazy, you know, you're depressed and yet you have the energy to do something about it, to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty, and I got to tell you, you know, having been there, I totally forgot what it was like because for the past, I'd say 13, 14 years, I've been fine. I've been leading a normal life. But before that was hell. And then when I stopped taking the medication last month, I was reminded what hell it can be. Mm-hmm. And you see, the thing is, you have to have no reason to be depressed. You just are. You just like, and it's like, I'm telling you, Charlotte, for a few days, it felt like physical pain.
Wow.
That's how it felt.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I totally forgot where I came from, you know? So, yeah.
Well, I'm
so
glad
you're stuck
that
with
you're okay now.
Yeah, you know. And, you know, but you start with the, I mean, you're stuck with the
side effects,
right. You know. And so we'll see what I'm going to do about that. But, yeah. But anyway, this sounds promising, you know. And
definitely.
This Alternatives Brain Institute. And you guys should definitely check out the website, alternativesbraininstitute.com. And,
yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's beyond my understanding, but it sounds impressive. So,
yeah.
You know, it sounds serious, so that's good.
It does.
Yeah. So what were we talking about before he called? I can't remember now, but we were talking about something interesting or
yeah,
whatever.
I'm not sure either.
It doesn't matter.
I saw on, it actually came up, I follow one of the, I worked at a news station and well, I interned there in Florida, and I follow them on Facebook, and they posted an article about a plane flying from Philadelphia to Orlando. Suddenly, it was going through bad turbulence, suddenly dropped, causing harm to like 8 people, had to go to hospital. But imagine if, because they were going through bad turbulence, imagine if suddenly a plane like just dropped.
Right.
Oh my God.
Well, it's funny you picked up on this news item because that was the first thing I was going to bring up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because this stuff scares the hell out of me.
Right?
There.
I mean, because you don't imagine. I mean, I've flown so many times.
Right.
And sometimes I don't wear my seatbelt. And if I'm sleeping and I don't have my seatbelt on and I start this turbulence, I don't think, oh, I should put my seatbelt on because I feel safe.
Right.
I'm in a plane. I'm sleeping. I don't want to move. But, I mean, it's crazy. The fact that the plane dropped and, like, someone said that the heels of some person was at that eye level.
Really?
And it's like,
wow.
Wow. Yeah. Imagine, like, just shooting to the top of the airplane, banging your head, having to go to hospital. You just don't expect... I don't expect the worst on an airplane. I mean, it's safer to fly in an airplane than drive in a car.
Right. And the thing is that, you know, it's not so much that, you know, that I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt if it drops. I'm more involved with, like, the plane is going to, like, turn over or something or just dive.
Right.
You know, and not be able to recover. And, you know, the thing is, this stuff really scares me. And it's funny because people tell you, oh, it's nothing. It's just like waves in the ocean. And I'm like, give me a break.
Right.
You know, I mean, this thing scares the hell out of me. I'm in the air, 30,000 feet up in the air, going like, you know, 500 miles an hour or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to drop. No, I don't want to drop. I don't even want to be shaken.
Me too.
And, but they're saying that they knew that there was turbulence. They just didn't think it was that strong.
That bad. Exactly.
Right.
And it's like, how do you not know that the plane might drop?
Right.
And then on the end of that.
Well, you can't really tell, you know, because you don't know what's out there.
True.
All you know is that the reason you know there's turbulence is because another plane reported it.
Yeah.
You know, but they may, nothing may have happened to them. But man, my heart would have dropped here.
Oh my God. Someone compared it to being on a roller coaster, you know, and you dip down.
Uh-huh.
But this is like a real life roller coaster where you're not tied to the roller coaster track.
Right.
You're just in like, kind of like skydiving, but you don't have a parachute.
Right.
You know? Which I've never
but
done, because that scares me too.
Yeah. But you got to keep the seatbelt on, man. I keep it on all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you never know, you know?
And it was a U.S. Airways flight.
Yeah?
So it was one that people fly. I mean, it was a Philadelphia to Orlando flight. That's not what you're expecting. And then on the end of that story, there was, it said that another plane on the runway had clipped another plane's wing.
Really?
And it's like, what? How does that happen?
Yeah.
You don't realize you're kind of close to another plane? But that's the worst, because those passengers in that plane will have been probably stuck on that plane for another 2 hours before they're taken off the plane and then had to board another, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The worst is when you're trapped in the plane, stuck on the runway.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just because of delays, you know?
Uh-huh, completely.
They'll let you sit there for an hour or two.
Yeah.
I know. I've been stuck in something like that once, and I don't like flying, you know? I'll tell you why. I used to love flying. I even told here that I almost got a pilot's license and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I flew and stuff. So I love flying. I mean, I was always fascinated with it. I remember being like an 8-year-old boy and being into like jet fighters and things like that, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's always fascinated me. But I got to tell you, as I've gotten older, man, I've gotten really scared of flying. Not only that, but it's a lot of hassle, you know, all the security, all the people and everything, you know, and all these delays and sitting on the runway and losing luggage and all
and
that.
And connections.
Yeah, you know, and late flights, you know, that's probably the most common, you know, late flights. Even if you're stuck in the terminal, mm-hmm. it's still, you know, I mean, if you have to sit there for an extra 3-4 hours, man, that's like, you know.
Especially on the way back from a trip.
Yeah,
on the way back from a trip, you're always like, oh, I just want to get home.
Yeah.
On the way there, it's a bummer because you just want to get there. But on the way back, it's like, okay, I've had my vacation or my work trip or wherever I've been. Now I just want to get home and go to bed.
Right.
So it's the worst.
And then you get stuck on the runway for 3 hours. Yeah,
right.
Well, what are you going to do, man?
But at least, yeah. It's true.
So there's a list here of some celebrities that are sexy in their 50s. And
is Meryl Streep on there?
Meryl Streep has got to be beyond 50s. No, I mean, she's probably in her 60s, you know. And
I love her.
And in the 60s, nobody looks good. I mean, come on, you know. The 50s, maybe, you know. So they're showing some, Elle McPherson, you know, she looks great. She just turned 50.
Mm-hmm.
George Clooney, I don't know how old he is. Let me see. 52.
Oh, I thought he was older than that.
No, he's 52. Yeah. Madonna, let's see. Madonna is 55.
I think Madonna's looking a little older.
Yeah, she's looking.
She gets...
Yeah, I know. She doesn't look like no Elle McPherson, I got to tell you. Yeah. Rob Lowe looks great. Mm-hmm. He's 50. Some people just don't age, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like it.
That anti-beauty cream doesn't work. You have to have good genes.
Yeah. I know. So then you have, Sharon Stone. Okay, so she's got a sexy cover here in Shape magazine. But I don't know if you've seen her lately without a lot of makeup and stuff. She doesn't look that great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Well, you know, I mean,
makeup does a lot, especially makeup for camera.
Yeah.
When you get airbrush makeup or.
Exactly, yeah. And many of these do. I mean, that's why these celebrities look so great, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Even without major surgery, you know, if you just have a little collagen here and there,
right.
One anti wrinkles or something, it helps, you know.
Yeah.
So, Michelle Pfeiffer, 55, I was sure she was much older than that because she's just. Not because of the way she looks, but because, you know, I only now see what she looks like now. I haven't seen her in a while. But the fact that she's just been around for so long.
Yeah.
You know?
It does seem like someone that would be older. Yeah, I agree. She has been around for a long time.
So she's 55. So Valerie Bertinelli, 53. Okay, I don't know if you know who she was.
I don't.
Married to Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, okay.
And she was in the series, before you were born, like in the 70s, called One Day at a Time. So, yeah, she looks okay. I don't know. David Duchovny, he looks great, 53.
The guys seem to have aged better than the females.
That's true, huh? I think that's the case. That's true. Because
Dang
I'm looking
it.
At the pictures here. Yeah. Let's see. Gina Gershon, 51. She looks good. I thought she'd be older, too, because she's been around for a long time. Billy Bob Thornton, 56. I thought he was older. No, I'm sorry. That's not him. I totally like misread the picture. This is Daniel Day-Lewis, 56. Yeah, he looks okay. And Demi Moore, let's see, how old is she? She's 51.
See, I wouldn't expect her. but to be in her 50s.
Well, no, she's in her 50s, but like Rob Lowe, you know, I mean, they're about the same age. They were in St. Elmo's Fire and all these movies. But, you know, she obviously had a lot of work done, you know.
Yeah.
And she's one of those that doesn't look the same as she used to anymore.
Right. The before and after pictures.
Right. I mean, she looks pretty and everything, but, you know, she doesn't look like who she used to look like.
I like looking at the before and after photos of celebrities.
Yeah, you know.
And the makeup and without makeup photos.
Yeah.
Because everyone looks different without makeup.
That's true,
and especially celebrity makeup. That makeup's always perfect.
That's true, yeah. So maybe that's why the men seem to have aged better, you know, because...
Maybe because, I mean, men do wear makeup on camera, but not half as much, not to, like, change your face.
Right.
Which some... women it can.
Yeah.
But that's true. Maybe that's why men look in the public eye look to have aged better.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we see them pretty much without makeup most of the time.
Yeah, I know. Heather Locklear, 52. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of people. Okay, so what? I'm not supposed to feel bad about turning 54 on Saturday?
No.
Okay, well... I do.
50 is the new 40.
My ass.
Oh, I always say that. My friend turned 30 and I was like, 30 is the new 20. But it's true. Those are the sayings.
Yeah, but
50 is the new 40. 40 is the new 30.
Well, yeah, that's what people that are older say, you know. They don't want to feel old, you know. But I don't know. By any definition, I remember being younger. 50 seemed old. I mean, it was just old, okay? But... yeah, I don't feel I look, you know, old, and I don't feel old.
Don't.
So I just need to convince myself it's okay.
That you're
it's
not
okay.
Old.
Yeah, it's okay to be 54, you know.
Acceptance.
Yeah, there you go. I accept yourself.
Positive mental attitude about turning 54.
Yeah, right. You know, for someone who's had a hard time accepting himself all his life, I think many people have that problem, though. You know, until it's just a different point in your life, you come to terms with who you are and you accept yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think many years, especially when you're young, like in your teens, it's hard to accept yourself for who you are, you know.
Completely.
You just want to be like everybody else.
Right.
You want to be accepted.
And if you're not accepted by the people around you, you're probably not going to accept yourself as much.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why aren't they accepting me? Why don't they want to be friends with me?
Yeah, right? Exactly. So, but that's what happens, because you really value yourself based on how people value you or how you think people value you.
It's you know? Exactly. It's that. It's how you think you're portrayed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that happens, you know. So, okay, well, anyway, I guess we're almost out of time. They have something here on... do you have anything else you wanted to bring up or anything?
Have you been following the Donald Sterling situation?
Kind of, a little bit. I mean, not in particular. I just hear the headlines, you know. Mm-hmm. Here's the wife, here's the mistress.
Yeah.
So what's going on there?
I mean, now he's... the first interview that he's done, he said that he wished he'd paid her off.
Yeah, that's what I heard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I agree with him.
I know.
If you already said it, you know. It's,
but now it's like, just don't even say that, you
know? I know. Don't say anything, right?
And he's going to try. On Friday, I interviewed Lee Steinberg, who is the character, Jerry Maguire.
Uh-huh.
The character's based off Lee Steinberg.
Okay.
He's done interviews with CNN, and he owns a company.
Okay.
That represents athletes. And I've interviewed him about the situation. He basically said, I mean, what judge wants to represent Sterling in this situation?
Right.
Because now he's going to take it to court. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a courtroom. Because he's going to take this situation to court if the other owners of the NBA teams, because they have to get 3/4 of the owners have to vote to say that he doesn't, to get him out, to sell. But Sterling's going to take it to court. And now it's just, I mean, I think he's got no hope pretty much of getting a judge to take his side.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been recorded saying so. I mean, the recordings were just terrible.
Yeah.
He said, like, just, it was just bad.
Really? Did you hear it?
Yeah. And then his mistress has said that Stiviano, that this is just one conversation of many. But she doesn't think he's racist. So
right.
It's like you're
I saw the headline here. Why doesn't she think he's racist?
Because he says things in the moment. And he doesn't think about it or mean it. But I mean, everyone's pretty much what you say in the moment is technically true because it just comes
sometimes,
out.
Yeah.
That's sometimes, what I think. Yeah. And the same when, because a lot of people say, oh, I was drunk when I said that. And it's like, well, the truth kind of comes out when you're drunk.
Yeah. It's true. When you're angry and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think it's a lost. I mean, he got recorded saying it and yeah. he kind of has to
and
deal
she
with
she let
the
it out. You know, I would be yeah. so pissed, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because she's lived off of him for years mm-hmm. now, right?
Yeah.
How long has he been with her?
I'm not sure exactly.
But at least a year, a couple of years. Oh, yeah, definitely. For him to trust her and give her mm-hmm. all this money and everything. But
she can't feel too bad because she leaked this.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's saying, I wish I'd paid her off, shows that he knows that.
And not only that she tried to blackmail him, right?
Oh, I didn't see that.
But, I mean, think about it. If he...
Well, oh, well, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Or maybe she didn't. But, and he just said, you know, but why would she do it?
Exactly.
Yeah, why would she do it? If she loved him or had any feelings mm-hmm. for him or
you
even
don't do
not.
That.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, completely. He's done so much for her. But
yeah,
but that's the thing. And you know what? It's... I'm sure a lot of people say things like this and much worse behind closed doors.
Exactly. But that's something that comes with your power and your status. And when you're the owner of the Clippers,
right.
you can't be saying stuff like that, no matter what. But then again, if people do say that behind closed doors, he thought he was talking to a reliable person.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Someone he could trust. Oh, well, you know, so it came out and everybody's upset.
Yeah. Was it a publicity stunt?
I don't know, but
possibly.
I mean, yeah, but I don't think it helped anybody here. If nobody had ever heard the conversation, nobody would have been the wiser, mm-hmm. and everything would have gone on just fine.
Yeah.
You know.
True.
Yeah. Anyway, we are out of time. Thank you, Adi Jaffe, Dr. Adi Jaffe, who called in. And Charlotte, thank you as always.
Thank you.
For brightening up our mornings.
Aww.
And and we'll see
Happy
everybody.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, that's true. Go out and celebrate.
Lots of margaritas.
Lots of margaritas. And tequila and everything.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Right here on LA Talk Radio.